listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Bradley and Defoe off to Toronto they go. The Major League Soccer outfit expected to announce this weekend two huge signings in the form of US men's national team captain Michael Bradley, or captain to be, should I say, Michael Bradley and Jermaine Defoe. Tottenham's out of luck and out of favour forward could be making their way, and should be making their way to Canada for next year's Major League Soccer season. Messi is back, and back with a bang. Two goals in the space of about 4 minutes as Barca get past Getafe in the Copa del Rey. And Manchester City looks sensational once again, but can Big Sam keep his big job at West Ham? It's a tough ask indeed for the former Bolton manager, and it won't have been helped by his side's slump against Manchester City 6-0. In the League Cup semi-final first leg last night. Welcome to World Football Daily. I'm Oliver the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news and the many views from around the world of football. A huge evening yesterday, whilst we were all watching, I'm sure, West Ham take a battering to Manchester City, and then flicking across to see Getafe and Barcelona playing it out, waiting for Lionel Messi's much-anticipated return since the 10th of November last year. And then suddenly, Taylor Twellman, that cheeky little chappy from the US soccer scene, got the link and got the hookup that Toronto FC were making some big moves indeed. And the rumour is Michael Bradley and Jermaine Defoe set to become Toronto players for next season. How long and what the details are, we don't know just yet. But it seemed pretty much common knowledge by the end of last night across Twitter, that those two players will be joining the Canadian Major League Soccer outfit. And everything just went crazy. There was still obviously a game of football going on whilst all this was taking place. Manchester City sweeping past West Ham 6-0, as I say, in the League Cup semi-final first leg. And City doing exactly what United can't do right now. And that's win well with a powerful side. And when you compare the starting lineups of Manchester United and Manchester City last night, you can see exactly why David Moyes is in such trouble in terms of trying to compete with the top teams, not just in Europe, but in the Premier League as well. Let's take a look at them very quickly. City's lineup last night. Pantilimon starting in goal, Clichy, Lescott, Company and Zabaleta across the back four, Garcia, Torre, Nasri and David Silva with Edin Dzeko and Negredo up front. That's just the starting lineup, and that's still not City's probably their best 11. You compare that, okay, compare the quality that was running through that City side last night to what United started with against Sunderland on Tuesday night. United kicking off with David De Gea in goal, Raphael, Vidic, Evans, Evra, Carrick, Cleverley, Januzaj, Giggs, Valencia, Welbeck. Now, how many of those United players would get into that City side that started the game last night? How many? Giggs wouldn't. Januzaj, I don't think would, despite his good performances. Welbeck certainly wouldn't outplace Dzeko or Negredo right now. Cleverley or Carrick? Nope, not a chance in those holding midfield positions. Especially with Yaya Toure in there dominating. And you've got Fernandinho on the bench for Manchester City. Evra, Evans, Vidic, Raphael. Would any of those defenders outplace even Lescott in that Manchester City defence? I do not think so. City showing what the strength of a squad really is. Just going to show how poor this United squad is at the moment that David Moyes is dealing with compared to the others in that top six battle around him. And obviously, United are not in that top six at the moment. City were fantastic. Dzeko, Negredo, Negredo's first goal especially, you know, coming over his left shoulder with the left foot, and he got almost the perfect connection with it. It's an unbelievable strike. No chance for Adrian in that West Ham goal. And you have to look at West Ham. You know, they've brought in Roger Johnson, a man who has been relegated 3 years in a row, two with Wolves and, of course, once with Birmingham as well before that. A man who joined Sheffield Wednesday and didn't keep a clean sheet with the club until mid-December. A man who's managed to fail upwards in the last few years. And he's now going to be playing Premier League football. They are struggling with centre-backs. And I think Sam Allardyce just wanted to bring in an easy, comfortable guy who would have the positional sense, at least, to play at centre-back, and who was tall enough to play at centre-back, as opposed to those short full-backs that Allardyce has been using in that back four. But you saw yesterday when Yaya Toure, and Yaya Toure is an incredible player, very difficult to defend against, of course, but when Yaya Toure started to steam down the centre of the pitch in the build-up to his goal, what did Roger Johnson do? Just jockey, back off, until Yaya Toure got to the edge of the 18-yard box, jinked to the right, and smashed the ball past Johnson and into the back of the net. And I think that just shows what Sam Allardyce has done. He's panicked. He's brought in a defender, just to kind of a central defender to fill in the gap for the moment. They're hoping, obviously, to bring in Lescott and maybe a couple of others that we're hearing about, but it's going to take more than just that, I think, for West Ham to be able to get themselves out of the hole at the moment. And they obviously were never going to compete with that City side last night. They have a big fixture coming up this weekend as they take on Cardiff, West Ham United, in the Premier League. We'll be talking about that tomorrow on World Football Daily. An action-packed show. Joseph Sexton will be joining us a little later on to talk a little bit of La Liga, Lionel Messi making his return to Barca. But I'm delighted to say that we are joined today by a man who is pretty much starting his career here in the US, but I'm, of course, in England right about now, in Major League Soccer. Yesterday, the Columbus Crew signing two of their homegrown stars to new deals, Ross Friedman and Matt Walker. And I'm delighted to say that joining us on the line now is one of those two new homegrown stars who's just signed their contract yesterday to play for the Columbus Crew. Joining me on the line, new MLS and future star, Mr. Matt Walker, joining us here. Matt, it's a pleasure to have you on board, mate. How are you? It must be an incredible feeling to be in Major League Soccer and to have signed that contract. First and foremost, mate, how does it feel to finally be able to put your name down as a Columbus Crew player at the team that you supported growing up? It must be an incredible feeling for you at this moment in time. Can you put it into words at all?
Yeah, well, firstly, thanks for having me, guys. It's a pleasure to be on. And, I mean, this is something that I've been waiting for my entire life. I came up in the Crews Academy when I was 16 and kind of felt the whole process through, stuck through it throughout the years, and it's really, really good, to be honest with you, to be a member of the first team that wears black and gold.
At what point in your career, in your life, did you start thinking that not only soccer was something that you enjoyed playing, but was something that could potentially be a full-time career for you? When does that kind of thought process come into your head?
Well, I mean, at some point, dreams become reality. And I think that after I was testing myself at every level and succeeding, whether it be college or in the academy with the Crew, you know, it's just something that you decide this is something that I can take a run at. And I mean, I've always had faith and belief in myself. And I'm just happy to see it come to light here.
Was there any point, obviously, you've got to have that faith and belief in yourself, as you say, but there's also helpful people around you that help promote you, boost your career, boost your confidence. How did the family play a role, Matt? At what point did you have to say, look, I want to pursue sport, full-time sport, as a career, maybe instead of going down an educational route or a different sport as well?
Well, yeah, I mean, at some point you have to make decisions in college here in the States and what you want to do with that and where you want to pursue. And I think that when I was just getting out of high school, it came down to do I want to go to school and be a full-time student, or do I want to continue this dream? And I had faith, and it was never really a question for me. And my family was all supportive. They're on my back, and they're just as proud as I am today.
And you were a Columbus fan growing up as well, weren't you? Obviously, being from Cincinnati, Ohio, or born in Cincinnati, Ohio, should I say? What's it like to be able to pull on a Columbus Crew shirt? Have you done that yet? Have you kind of been into to get this shirt, get your shirt, and put it on and kind of walk about in it, see how it feels to be wearing the black and gold?
I haven't actually yet got to put it on and feel it, but I tell you what, as soon as I found out, it gives me chills still to this moment. You know, it's one of those things where I don't know how many games I went to as a kid and how many nights I stayed up hoping that I'd get my chance. And to be able to play in the MLS for me is special, but to be able to play for the team that I love and have grown up watching, I couldn't be prouder.
And you were successful with the academy as well, under 20 and under 19 level. I went to college, went to Xavier University, played soccer there. There's always questions about US and the development, the academy system and the college system, and whether maybe a European style would work best. But how beneficial, and take us through a little bit of the experience of going through that academy and then college soccer career and then coming back to Major League Soccer. What was that like for you? How was the process?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the academy, especially when I was in it, was first starting to fire up. I actually wasn't involved in the academy in my U16 year, and that was the first year that it was becoming a factor. And then it was obvious after 1 year that that was the route I needed to take. So I immediately tried out for the Crew's U18 squad and ended up making that. And I mean, the academy, it keeps getting better, and that's the encouraging thing. You know, you're seeing more and more young players coming up and signing for their squads. And that's encouraging, to say the least, not only for the kids who want to do that, but just for the league in general. And obviously, I think college is something that's been a part of the American soccer community and will continue to do so. I think that it helped me tremendously just being able to play teams from all across the country and gaining experience against players that I may not have been able to play against prior. So I think that both had their will have a part in shaping how I play today and I'm really looking forward to how they help me in the future.
When did you know, Matt, that you were going to be signing on the dotted line this week? Was it a surprise when it came, or had you known for a while before you signed the contract?
It wasn't necessarily a surprise. You know, I had been in communication with the old staff throughout my 4 years at Xavier, and it was just more on the lines of they were just keeping touch. You know, I was doing. They were obviously following me in college, and when the new staff came in and I reached out to them and we connected through a couple emails, and then they invited me to their combine to get a look, and then we stayed in touch ever since. And I won't say that I knew it was coming, but I was definitely hopeful and extremely excited and happy when I heard.
What was the first thing that you did? I mean, you put the phone down or was told about it. What was the first thing that you did? Was it kind of a fist pump jumping around the room? Was it straight on the phone to the family and friends?
Yeah, actually, my mom and dad were with me, and I think as soon as I got the call, they were already hoping that it was what they thought. So to be honest, I gave my mother a hug, and you know, she's been with me in this process through up to this point, so I know she was extremely happy for me, and it was a special moment.
What's it like as well, joining this squad, which has got 7 homegrown players on it? It's a big part of the Columbus Crew at the moment, this homegrown talent, and does that make it easier, do you think, for you to learn off other people's experiences of being a homegrown player coming into Major League Soccer?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know I'm extremely comfortable, and I'm good friends with 4, 5, 6 guys on the squad right now, just through what I've done in the academy alone. So from a player's perspective, as far as myself as another homegrown, it's encouraging, it's comfortable. And I think it's going to help this club. I think that it says something about the club when they're having their own players in the first team roster. And last year, they had 4 homegrown start in the same game. That's exciting. And, you know, just from the standpoint, it's encouraging. And, you know, I think I'm excited to see what we can do this year.
What's it now for you, Matt? Where do you go from here? Because it would be easy for somebody in your position to have signed the contract and said, I've made it. I'm in Major League Soccer now. How do you keep yourself going, motivated, obviously, to not only be the best footballer that you can for the next few years, but for the remainder of that career without sitting back and thinking, hey, I'm part of Major League Soccer. You know, this is done and dusted. All this hard work has now paid off.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's always the oh my God moment, you know, when you finally can say that you made it and you're part of a squad. But I mean, it all comes down to, in my opinion, personal motivation. I've been wanting this moment. I'm not just going to sit back. You know, it's something I've dreamed about. But at the end of the day, it is what you make of it. And I'm going to give it my best run here. I'm going in, you know, trying to prove a point and trying to show that us homegrown talents can compete and, I want to earn my spot just like anybody else, if that's possible, you know, and if not, I will help the team in any way I can. So it's going to be, I'm excited for it. I'm extremely motivated right now.
Have you set yourself goals for this first year as well? I mean, as in number of starts that you want to get, the impact that you want to make on the side?
Sure. I mean, I don't know if it's from a number of starts standpoint or if it's anything statistical. For me, honestly, I want to get out there and prove my worth, you know, as a young guy, you want to be able to show that you're reliable and accountable in a new squad. And I'm looking forward to getting my opportunity. And if that's going to be starting a certain number of games, coming off the bench, you know, doing what I can, I'm going to do anything. Who
Matt, would you like to kind of style your game around from the midfield? What professional do you kind of try to relate your game to as much as possible? Or is it very much you play within in what you're very comfortable with yourself, you don't style it on anybody else?
I don't know if I particularly look to play like anybody else. I like to play good soccer, to be honest. I'm good in tight spaces. I'm good in combination play. You know, I think that what I do best is bringing other people into the attack and going forward. And that's just kind of what I want to bring to the squad. You know, I'm good with the ball at my feet. I like to run at players, and it's just a very attacking mentality. So when I get the ball, I want to go forward, and that's what I'm going to look to do.
And Matt, finally, a nice easy one for you. Who do you want to win the Ballon d'Or come Monday for World Footballer of the Year, mate?
I'm a little guy, so I've always been partial to Messi. So, but it looks like Ronaldo might take this one. So.
Oh mate, you can't just side with Messi just because of the height. you can't. You've got to go with Ronaldo or Ribery, my man, this season. Matt,
yeah, I know it ain't gonna happen for him. It's tough for me to see as a Messi fan, but it's definitely gonna be Ronnie this time around.
Who do you support?
And good for him, you know. I feel for him, you know. He's I feel like he's been worthy every year, so. It's nice to see he's going to get his finally.
Who do you support in terms of European soccer? Do you have a side that you follow and keep a track on in Europe, or is it very much crew and crew alone?
I do. I'm also an Arsenal fan.
Oh no, Matt, we might fall out here. I don't know if we'll be making a return or not. We will hopefully catch up with you soon. But
it's a split household. You see, I have a twin brother, and he supports United Manchester. So it's tough here every weekend. You know, let's just say I'm doing well with the way the season's gone so far, and he's not been so happy, which is a little abnormal for the way things have gone the past few years.
Oh, it must be really rubbing it in that you signed this week just as United go on their 3-game losing streak, and everything's going up and up for Arsenal and yourself.
Yeah, I know it.
Well, I hope that the family bonds stay strong, Matt, and I hope it's with all seriousness that you and Ross Freeman both have fantastic first seasons in Major League Soccer. As we said at the beginning, a massive congratulations to both of you for joining the ranks in the crew of those homegrown players, and we wish you every success in your first year of Major League Soccer, mate.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for joining us, Matt, and we look forward, and hopefully we'll get a chance to catch up with you soon as well, if Alex lets us, of course. That's the big deal.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Matt. Take care. Matt Walker there joining us here on World Football Daily today from the Columbus Crew after signing for the Crew his first pro contract with the Major League Soccer side. A fantastic opportunity for him and a dream well and truly earned and deservedly living right about now. It was interesting, actually. I was reading up on Matt and some of his career and his time at Xavier, of course, University. And also, the Columbus Crew obviously did a quick interview with both him and Ross about what it was like to sign. And they asked him, what was the first thing that you bought because obviously signing a new contract, I was never going to ask Matt what money was on right there and then, but signing a new contract, obviously people always ask, you know, what's the first thing that you bought? And he said straight up, in the same way that he said, you know, his family were with him when he got the call and the first thing he did was he hugged his mother. The first thing he said he was going to buy was a bouquet of flowers for his mum. Down to earth, to the end, I get the feeling, Matt, and a delightful chap indeed. And really appreciate him taking out the time from what I'm sure is suddenly becoming a much more hectic schedule to tell us about what it's like to join Major League Soccer and to be living that dream. The 5 foot six midfielder who empathises with Lionel Messi on height. Very peculiar indeed that's what links the two guys together. The height is where the empathy comes and why Matt wants Messi to win the Ballon d'Or. We will be talking about that with our next guest here on World Football Daily, although there's plenty to get through as well in terms of all things La Liga football. I'm delighted to say, after a busy week of Copa del Rey and La Liga getting back underway last weekend, that we are joined by our first Spanish football guest of 2014. And what a great guy to have joining us. He is a man with an Irish tone to his Spanish football knowledge and somebody who we love having on here on World Football Daily. Joining us here to talk all things La Liga, Messi's return, and of course the big game coming up this weekend between Atletico Madrid and Barca. The one, the only, Joseph Sexton, joining us here on WFD. Joseph, mate, a pleasure to have you back. Hope you had an enjoyable Christmas break and New Year, and pleasure to have you back here on World Football Daily, mate. How are you doing?
And Happy New Year. It's great to be back on, guys.
It's been a nice off-season, I'd say, for you, but we're back and in full swing straight away. And last night, it was almost... It wasn't about the Copa del Rey last night, it seemed. It seemed about just waiting for Messi to return for Barca. How big is it to just have him back after being out since about mid-November?
It's absolutely massive. I suppose the positive thing is that the team has been motoring on well without him, and, you know, players such as Cesc, such as Pedro, such as Alexis have all stepped up in his absence. You know, they've been without Neymar as well. But you can't really put a figure on the amount that Messi brings to this side. You could see from the 55th minute, once he started warming up last night, the crowd were just shouting Messi, Messi. And I suppose there'd been a hope that he was going to come back in the league game against Elche at the weekend, but I think Tata Martino's played this just right. He gave Neymar a run out that day, just, you know, keep him ticking over. And, it was quite the run out Messi got last night then with the two goals.
I was going to say, it was an incredible kind of on comes Messi. And, I mean, you could have almost have written it before it even took place that he'd get on the goal sheet and two in a matter of minutes. It must be nice to see him also back, but not only that, but straight back into the mix, looking almost like his old self.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing was, when he came on at first, he took two or three bad touches, I think, gave the ball away, looked a bit, as you would expect, perhaps a bit off, not on the same wavelength as his teammates. It was a little bit static, maybe not looking, you know, not sure where to run. But, I mean, that all washed away once he scored the first goal. You know, he was set up by Mark Bartra for that. It was one he really couldn't miss. And then after that, he was right back into the swing of things and, you know, got that fine second goal. And, you know, we must say as well, credit to Alex Song for picking him out, because that was a delicious pass from a player who's been often maligned, but who's kind of slowly finding his feet again under Tata Martino.
I was going to say, Alex Song is somebody that doesn't receive too much praise in Spanish football. When we're talking about January transfer windows and possible departures and possible arrivals, how many of these Barca players are kind of certain to be sticking around for the final part of the season? Are we going to see Tata Martino change up this squad too much at all in January?
I think he's happy with the squad he has. You can see that a key feature with Martino that, you know, wasn't the case under Tito Villanova, and to a lesser extent wasn't the case under Guardiola, is his willingness to rotate players. He's happy to take Messi off after 60 minutes in a game if the game is won, which you could never imagine happening under the previous two managers. And everybody's getting a game, you know, everybody's happy. We've seen... because of injuries, Alexis and Pedro have got more game time than they would have perhaps gotten otherwise, and they've seized the opportunity. I really don't see too many departures. There's been a lot of talk about Christian Teo to Liverpool. which the club has already gone on the record and said that won't happen. There's been some rumours of Pedro to Arsenal, which has just been, for my mind, paper talk. Perhaps the only departure I can see happening on loan from the team in this transfer window will be Isaac Cuenca, but I mean, Cuenca is not exactly the kind of name that's going to have the big boys in Europe queuing up to get his signature, as and I say that with all the respect, as good as a player he is.
I mean, one of the things about Barca in the last few years, there has been almost like a solid stable of players that have been together for so long. They're facing a new test, obviously able to get past Getafe and the Copa del Rey comfortably in the end last night. But in the league, they face a new test in terms of not just Real Madrid, but Atletico Madrid as well. And their season continues going almost from strength to strength, the one-all draw away from home in the Copa del Rey in this week. The game coming up this weekend, how much of, not a title decider, but how influential to the title race is this game?
It's going to be absolutely massive, and of course it's worth noting that when these two sides played in the Spanish Super Cup at the start of the season, there was literally nothing between them. It went down to away goals. I believe Atleti did such a good job of stifling Barca in the second leg that I think I'm correct in saying they didn't have a single shot on target. Leo Messi missed a penalty that night. And it's, you know, these are the two big contenders. Real are there waiting in the wings, hoping that there'll be, you know, someone takes points off the other or even a draw. You know, it's a win-win situation for Real Madrid this weekend ahead of those, ahead of that clash between the top two. But, you know, having said for so long this season that, you know, it's foolish to talk about the title, we've had a little bit more talk of that sort of thing from Simeone recently, even though he's kind of gone back on things he said then and said no. You know, too early to talk about the title again. He's a bit wary of getting caught up in those sorts of shenanigans. But you know, you look at this, it gives Atletico the opportunity to go top on their own for the first time this season. And you know, the thing is too that if the league becomes very tight, continues to remain very tight there at the top, head-to-head records are the deciding factor, not goal difference. So that could be crucial this season. Indeed, Barcelona, it's only what, 7-6? It's only 7 years ago that Barcelona failed to win the league because of their inferior head-to-head with Real Madrid, despite having a much better goal difference. And that came down to the last day as well. And of course, these two sides will meet on the last day of the season.
In terms of, and I don't want to go back to Lionel Messi all the time here, but obviously his return is obviously a big part of this Barca side. Do you get the feeling that he is fit from what you saw to play 90 minutes on the weekend, or will he have to be used sparingly again, returning, obviously missed the Elche game, but still returning so early back from injury?
Yeah, I get the impression that the club have taken a lot of care in the handling of this injury. They've learned a lot from the situation last season where he kept having recurrences or secondary injuries based on his initial injury, and it really spoiled Barcelona's season towards the end. He wasn't fit for the Bayern Munich game, and you know, they looked absolutely lost without him. I mean, I've said it already that the positive step we've seen this season is the team getting by without Messi. In fact, it's a curious statistical quirk, but they've actually scored more per game without him than they have with him in the side now. I wouldn't read too much into that, other than just to say the team has adapted to his absence. But in terms of this injury, they were very keen not to rush him back, not to panic. They looked at the fixture list, they looked at the injury to the extent, they looked at a time frame to get him back, and they decided it was realistic to get him back for this Atletico game. And you know, even though there, you know, some people might have liked to have seen him come back in the Elche game, I think it was entirely correct of Tata Martino not to take any chances. And he got that half-hour run out last night. And, you know, even a half-hour run out where he just gets to feel his way back into the game would have been great. But, you know, to go and score those two goals, you know, that's just sending a message loud and clear that Messi's ready to go.
Are they stronger now, having survived a reasonably long spell without Messi, this Barca side as well? Because, as you say, they have scored more goals without Messi there per game, and they've not seemingly missed too much of a beat. Is this side, has it answered its critics about being Messi orientated and dominated, and is it also almost more confident, the fact they know they can do it without Messi?
I think psychologically, it must have had a huge impact on the team and the players, you know, that they've managed to pull through this spell so strongly. I think, again, credit, you know, a man who's had his critics about the style of play, various other things in the Catalan press is Tata Martino, because he's had an extra degree of flexibility about him. He's, whereas in past seasons, Barca had very much, you know, I don't like going down the whole line of plan B and all that kind of stuff, but they had a very set style of play, and the style of the team was set up to, you know, naturally to suit Lionel Messi being the world's best player. But they've shown willingness this season to try a few different things in attack. They've used diagonal long balls forward through the wings quite a lot. That drew criticism, but that's actually benefited players like Pedro and especially Alexis Sanchez, who really tends to need that kind of space to run into. And I think just, you know, Martino, he won the championship in Argentina with Newell's, playing a very attacking, you know, short passing 4-3-3 game, which was very similar to Barcelona's style. But he also managed Paraguay in the last World Cup and the last Copa America, playing a very defensive style. So we know that he's a coach that has more to his repertoire than just a single style. He's looked at the players he has, he's set the team up accordingly. But they seem to have that little bit of flexibility where they can go into games now without Messi, or trying something a little bit different, and, you know, maybe having a little bit less possession and playing a little bit more direct. And, you know, a little bit of unpredictability is always good, because, as you correctly said, the team last season, you know, we don't want to obviously say too much about Tito Villanova because of his unfortunate problems, but, you know, he was away for a long while and the team seemed to be on autopilot, and when they needed to change things, there wasn't quite the authority at the club to make those changes. And, you know, we've seen Tata Martino making subtle changes to the style, and that's ultimately got to benefit them going into the business end of the Champions League.
Talking of business, I do want to get onto Real Madrid, but in just a second, because there's plenty of business surrounding Atletico Madrid and whether they're going to be able to keep a number of their talents over this January transfer window. Plenty of people looking at Koke and Diego Costa. Do we see changes? Obviously, it's unlikely there's going to be any big moves before the game this weekend, but do we see changes throughout January of the makeup of this Atletico side, or will they be able to hold on to their talent considering that they are still joint level on top of La Liga with Barca?
Yeah, I think the fact that they're in there very much with a shout of winning the title, and that they're, you know, well placed to advance in the Champions League, that's a crucial factor here. There's paper talk of English clubs looking to buy Diego Costa, but I mean, my understanding is that he's privately intimated to Diego Simeone that he's not going anywhere. He really bought into Simeone's project. Simeone told him in the summer that now with Falcao all the way, that he was going to be the number one guy for them, basically, and he's responded magnificently. Again, with Koke, he's been linked with Manchester United, a player who could surely step in and improve on United's midfield. But again, you know, there's, you know, people take a very cynical view of footballers at times, thinking that it's all about money. But money reflects status, and the greatest reflection of status is success. And this Atletico side are primed for success at the moment. They've recently taken on the Argentine player Jose Sosa, who used to play for Napoli and Bayern. They've taken him on from a Ukrainian side. And that's very much a player to bolster the squad, to give them additional options. But, you know, I think there's a really good atmosphere around the club. And one fantastic thing about Atletico this season is that they have real options from the bench. You know, you could argue that at times this season their bench has had more game changers on it than Real and Barca, which is, you know, saying something about the way that Simeone's managed the squad. You know, particularly at a club where they've gone through so many tumultuous times in the past.
I suppose for Atletico, the second half of the season, is there a choice that they have to make, or is it very much, well, we're in the Champions League, we're still in the Copa del Rey, and we're joint top with La Liga. Shall we just enjoy it, or is there going to be a serious decision of we will push all of our eggs into, say, the La Liga basket to try and win this La Liga for the first time in a very long time?
Yeah, I think there was a Madrid-based journalist put a similar question to one of the players before Christmas. you know, saying perhaps, you know, perhaps exiting the Cup without Ray might aid them in the title challenge and the push for the Champions League. But, you know, he was just given a look and a straightforward answer that there's no way Diego Simeone would countenance anything like that. This is a man who's very great belief in his squad, instills great belief in his squad, and he's going to be in every competition to win it until the very last.
Finally, we need to go across to Los Blancos, and their search for La Decima will continue, of course, in February when the Champions League returns. But in the meantime, they have been able to lock down at least Xavi Alonso in that holding midfield role. And in terms of big signings, what does this do for Madrid's stability in the heart of the pitch?
It's absolutely vital. In the earlier points of the season, they really, you could really see what you know, what his absence. You know, the effect that the absence had on the team, because he's the man through whom everything passes. He's the man who sprays those diagonal balls out to Cristiano Ronaldo and, of course, now Gareth Bale. And the uncertainty, you know, should they lose a player like him at the end of the season, he's going on 33 now, I think, but showing no signs of slowing down. The injuries he suffered haven't been anything to do with age. They've been contact injuries and... you know, it's very, very hard to replace a player like Xabi Alonso, a player so crucial to the way they set up. And you could say, you know, to use an old cliche, it's as good as a new signing, because I know now that they have this guy locked down until 2 years' time. And, you know, hopefully in that time, Iarra Mendy, who arrived for a lot of money in the summer, can mature into a similar sort of player, but under the guidance of Xabi Alonso.
Little bit of hot water for Madrid in terms of Di Maria. Di Maria, sorry, and sounds almost like Tia Maria, that Di Maria. Di Maria and his gesture as he was substituted on the weekend. Are there going to be serious repercussions? We've obviously seen peculiar gestures in the past. I remember a certain incident when Jose Antonio Reyes scored and somebody put it, well, made a very awkward celebration with him back in the day. But is Di Maria going to face serious repercussions by his kind of Michael Jackson crotch grab-esque gesture?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, he's obviously denied that he was making a gesture to the crowd. He said he was trying to make himself more comfortable. Now, make of that what you will. I'd be on the side saying that he was making a gesture, but, you know, the question really has been that Real have said they were going to investigate the matter further, but now I see that Ancelotti said in his last press conference that, for as far as he's concerned, and there's no case to answer. So it looks like perhaps this one isn't going to go anywhere after all.
And just finally, Joseph, I know we're running out of time. We do need to let you get back and down to work and down to business. But I need to ask you about the kind of the really nice stories that we've seen in Spanish football at the moment. The resurgence of Villarreal up there in sixth, and Athletic Bilbao as well up there in fourth at the moment in La Liga. Of all the stories that have surprised us slightly in a positive manner, and of course I want to avoid Real Betis and their fall down onto the bottom of the La Liga table, which one do you see maintaining momentum through the second half of this season as we head to the latter stages?
I think Sevilla are primed to do well, better than they've done in previous seasons. They're not too far off the Champions League places. They seem to have got a little bit more about them. They seem to have the squad settled, and most importantly, because this was a problem extending back over a year, They hadn't won a game away from home, and now they've won several games on the road, which kind of gets that monkey off their back. And of course, a lot will come down to whether they can keep hold of Ivan Rakitic, who again has been linked with English clubs, who's been an absolutely fantastic player since he joined 3 years ago from Schalke, but probably wasn't at his best last season. But he's been created more chances than any other player in La Liga this season. He's been on top form. He's been scoring goals, and he's been really, you know, helping get the most out of the players around him. So I think Sevilla is a side to watch, but I suppose you could say it's not a fairy story because they were there last season, but Real Sociedad looked off the pace not so long ago. Their Champions League campaign was a disaster. Their manager had departed to France, you know, replaced by a managerial novice from inside the club. But with their win over Bilbao at the weekend, they've gone within a point of them in fourth place, or rather within a point of fourth place. And Bilbao and I look at Sociedad, I see the potential for goal scoring in the Sociedad team that you just don't see at Athletic at the moment. And I've got a feeling that Real could nick that final Champions League spot. And to do that two seasons in a row, that would be real fairy tale stuff.
Who's winning the Ballon d'Or, Ronaldo, Messi or Ribery, Joseph?
I think, right, I suppose there's two questions. Who do I think should win it and who do I think will win it? Very hard to say. I can see Ronaldo's exploits this season tipping the balance because the amount of goals he scored, the fact that he scored the most goals ever in a Champions League group stage, the hat-trick against Sweden, you know, it's supposed to be who's the best player in the whole year, but, you know, we obviously know that things that have happened in the recent past can really colour judgments here. I think he deserves to win it because, with the greatest of respect to Ribery, I think Ribery was picked out as the Bayern candidate that we, you know, Bayern really, it was a real team effort. It's very hard to pick out individuals in that team, you know. And in a similar way to the vote for Spanish players after the 2010 World Cup were kind of split, allowing Lionel Messi to come ahead. You know, I see that being the reason why Ribery is put forward. And I just don't think you can compare, you know, with the greatest of respect, the individual statistics of Ribery. You know, I know it shouldn't all be about goal scoring, but I think it's going to go to Ronaldo. And to be honest, I think it probably should go to Ronaldo this year because of the work he's put in.
Joseph, you're a top man as always for joining us here on World Football Daily and giving us your thoughts not only on La Liga, the Copa del Rey and of course the Ballon d'Or decision that takes place on Monday. And we look forward very much to having you back on the show in the near future. I'm glad you had a good new year and I got a bit of a rest and a bit of respite, but back to business for you, my friend. Thanks so much for joining us, mate.
No problem. Thanks for calling.
Take care. Joseph Sexton there joining us here on World Football Daily, freelance Spanish and European football journalist. You can follow Joseph on Twitter at Joseph SBCN. That's Joseph SBCN. All one word, all lowercase. Pleasure to have a chat a little bit of Spanish football with him after, of course, the Copa del Rey action from last night. Lionel Messi's return, 2 goals in his return there, and obviously getting into a little bit of the preview to the big game coming up this weekend. Big thanks there once again to Joseph for joining us here on World Football Daily. There's plenty to talk about today, though, on the show, and not all of it about Lionel Messi. We've already been through a bit of Manchester City and their dismantling of West Ham last night, and now it's time to look at the news that pretty much completely encapsulated our Twitter feed last night. The news that broke yesterday evening, thanks to Taylor Twelman and other sources, that Toronto FC are apparently pulling off 2 big moves this weekend, going to be announced on Monday. And later on over the weekend, that both Michael Bradley and Jermaine Defoe will be joining the franchise for next season. Still no details on whether it's going to be loan deals or full-time deals. Some people speculating Bradley's deal could be a 6-month loan with Toronto for the first half of their season, and of course missing out on the latter half of the Serie A season. Plenty of people undecided whether they enjoy these two moves, whether Defoe is selling the MLS short by being another European player coming to finish off his career for a big money pay packet, and whether Michael Bradley is selling his career short by not battling for a position in that Roma side of man, who's going to help me talk our way through this, clarify some of the things that were said on Twitter, and Of course get some feedback as well, as Raf, mate. Raf, first and foremost, I didn't see either of these coming. I mean, thank goodness we had Richard Whittle on saying, you know, Bradley not playing, maybe it meant a move to Verona, someone like that in Italy. There were a few people eyeing him up, but I don't think any of us expected Toronto, of all people, to be pulling off big moves like this. Similarly with Jermaine Defoe, I don't think many people, obviously all the talk about Lampard possibly coming to MLS and things like that, But I think, to be honest, I get the feeling the Lampard move is going to be saved for Beckham's franchise. I think that's going to be like Beckham's landmark first signing. That's reasonable to say. I think they're very close, those two. I think that will happen in a couple of years' time. But last night's news that Defoe and Bradley, it's still not completely confirmed. Toronto haven't released anything about it that I've seen today, that's for sure.
Have you seen the little promo video that's out there?
No, I've not seen the promo video.
It basically goes a little something like this, where there's it's like a setting in England, and it's like a cafe or something like that. Some gentleman in a white polo goes into sits down, gets a cup of tea, and he goes to sip his tea basically, And he goes, and then he spits it out, you know, and because he's watching the television as well. Oh, yeah, there's a television going on. And it's kind of giving the sports news. And kind of in the foreground, you see the Toronto FC logo. And it's basically, and then it says, you know, something big's coming on Monday. And it's, I think it's kind of like hinting at the fact that, well
that's Tottenham, that's the Jermaine Defoe move, isn't it?
Sure. But the Bradley move, you're right. I mean, that's the one that I really didn't see coming. I've heard rumors of Defoe coming to MLS. I mean, I wasn't necessarily expecting it to go to Toronto FC, but at the same time, TFC has kind of gotten to a point for me where I'm not really expecting anything of them. And again, I'm sorry for those who are dealing with my congestion a little bit. I'm sorry, guys. I'm a little under the weather.
Yeah, you could have taken some Sudafed. You could have taken some Sudafed before coming on. You know, maybe some Vicks VapoRub, cleaned out that system, you know.
But I'm feeling really good, Juice. Like I told you, I'm feeling good because I'm excited about all this stuff going on. This is actually a really exciting January transfer window. I mean, last year I feel like it was a little dull for most of it. But anyways, back to the point. I didn't see Bradley at all. One of the things that kind of was going on in the Twitter feed was whether or not you liked it. We kind of took the stance that it's not necessarily good to see America's best coming back too soon almost. And I mean, I kind of have to tend to agree. Like Michael Bradley. Seriously, one of our best talents, I think, you know, and essentially our best export right now. He is the best face, the best branding of U.S. soccer abroad that we can have. You know, a lot of people were standing up for him saying, oh, he hasn't had a bad game. You know, I can't see a game that Michael Bradley's ever played bad in. I think that was a little bit over-exaggerated, but he is, one of our most consistent players as well.
Rarely has a disaster in the holding midfield role.
Right. And on all levels. And to think of the travel that he's had to put in because he's been playing internationally, his career thus far has been fairly impressive. And you know, I think that I'm a little bit disappointed that he's coming back to MLS only because I would like to kind of keep that face and, you know, the branding of U.S. soccer kind of out there. I think that he is a perfect example of what is possible from U.S. soccer and what we can kind of have and the level of play that we can reach on a regular basis consistently. So I do think it's a little bit early for him to come here. I understand that it's about, you know, the other side of the U.S. soccer fans are going to say, well, you know, this is important to kind of get players in their prime to build the league's competition. I see that. I understand that. But there's just so much more pulling me to see the best American products kind of prove it abroad, I guess.
Well, I think there is, as you say, there's kind of two sides to this tale. You've got the one side, which is, you were saying there, you know, like a Dempsey type thing, like a Donovan, you know, the US's big players coming back to play in the US, because that's good, because you put big players on home soil, attracting attention to Major League Soccer and to soccer in general throughout the country. You know, that's really good promotion for MLS. And we saw how they kind of went crazy with Dempsey's move back to Seattle.
Right.
On the other side of it, you've got the effect it will have on US soccer and the US men's national team and on the individual as well. Because there's a point, let's take Dempsey for instance. Let's go back and go to Clint Dempsey.
Okay.
At Fulham, made a great name for himself. You know, I remember when I was out there with you guys and we were talking about, you know, Dempsey to Liverpool. He wants Champions League football. He's going to go to one of the big sides because he's proved it for two straight years at Fulham that he was the outstanding class in that Fulham side and a great Premier League player. Not great as in all-time great, but great as in at that point in time, there were a number of teams, big teams, that would have loved to have had Clint Dempsey in that form in their squad. So he made the big move. He went to Tottenham. He didn't get Champions League football, but he went to a big side. Let's not beat around the bush. Tottenham Hotspur, whatever Arsenal fans would like to say about them, are a big side. You know what? Dempsey struggled there. And that was difficult for Dempsey and difficult for US soccer because you had, you know, the US men's national team captain, a big player for the USA, and an icon. Struggling. You know, one of the modern icons of US soccer playing abroad. You know, because that's a big thing as well, isn't it, in US soccer, having players in the US players in the big European leagues. So that, you know, people who maybe discard Major League Soccer in the US but are soccer fans, watch European soccer because they believe the standard is much greater, much higher in the European leagues than Major League Soccer, and therefore find it more entertaining. Have kind of seen that promoted more by the big TV networks maybe than Major League Soccer has in the last 10-15 years overall. So they've kind of become attached to European soccer, and having US players in European soccer for them to follow helps draw their attention back to US soccer, back at home, back abroad, back with the US men's national team, and therefore back into Major League Soccer with the likes of people like Graham Zusi coming through MLS and becoming big players in the US men's national team. So that's a big deal. That's a big help for US right. soccer
in general. Can I just say real quick on that point? I think that the fact that, you know, if there are U.S. international players performing abroad, like you said, it does bring the attention back. And what that does is it ultimately raises the level of U.S. soccer here as well. Because what happens is, like you said, we look at, you know, these fans who look at, you know, Michael Bradley excelling at Roma, come back and look at, you know, examples like Graham Zusi and say, well, so what are you doing? And then, oh, okay, yeah. So Graham is kind of performing. He is excelling. And look what he did do for Sporting Kansas City this season. And then you see both of these kind of players meeting in the international camps, playing big tournaments and big games for the international side. And that only, you know, kind of drives home the nationalism and the backing behind the nation, as well as building a very kind of layered, styled brand of football. I mean, we are essentially really being the American side that we should be, a melting pot of styles and cultures and things like that. And we could really build a super cool hybrid style of soccer that could take off one day. I know I sound like I'm smoking crack right now, Juice, but I completely agreed with you on that point. That's all.
Well, and also Dempsey's kind of time in Europe benefited Clint Dempsey himself. You know, we saw him grow yes. and become a better player at Fulham. Now, at Tottenham, he struggled. And at 31 years old, you know, you're looking at Dempsey. He wants to be playing regular first-team football. Probably couldn't go back to Fulham on a long-term deal, and it would have been difficult for Tottenham to move him on anywhere else around the Premier League without that kind of, well, we don't want to sell to one of our rivals type thing going on. So Dempsey decided to make a big return to Major League Soccer, and that was big. That was fantastic because you had a big icon who played, you know, 3-4 years in the Premier League, playing well, you know, sporadically at Tottenham, but scored big goals in big games, like his goal against Manchester United at Old Trafford. And him coming back to Major League Soccer, as I say, was a big boost for the promotion of MLS, but maybe not the best decision for Clint Dempsey in terms of kind of going out on a high in his career in the Premier League and kind of proving to everybody, because it was such a big deal about Dempsey going to a big club, and then he went to a big club and didn't make it. Let's not beat around the bush. Dempsey didn't really make it at Tottenham. Now, Bradley, on the other hand, he's come from, you know, smaller clubs around Europe. When you look at his kind of previous record, you know, Heerenveen, in
Chievo,
Borussia Mönchengladbach, you know, had a bit of time in the Premier League and then went to Chievo. Now, Chievo, he did incredibly well in that side that finished 10th in 2011-12. And that's why he got the big move to Roma. And although Roma were poor last year, Bradley stood out as one of the players who was actually trying to hold that leaky midfield together under Zdeněk Zeman. It was a poor, poor Roma season that year, last season. This year, Roma, of course, doing a lot better. And Bradley's been in and out of the side. There's competition coming into this Roma team as well. But surely you want Bradley to be right. And this is the argument that the Euro snobs, as it was discussed, I'd never heard of this term. We'll talk about that in a second. But the Euro snobs were getting kind of all up about last night on Twitter. The idea that you want Bradley to be in Europe battling for a place rather than being in and out of the team, and therefore Roma kind of saying, well, you know what? If there's a big money move on the table to go back to Major League Soccer and be a superstar there, I'm going to take that over potentially improving the game. Because at 26 years old, he's about to start reaching that peak. And you want, surely you want him at that peak with the coaches, with the training, with the competition that Serie A top European football will bring, that you want that kind of testing Bradley. So he can become the leader that everybody... I mean, he is the biggest player, arguably, in that US men's national team right now because of his age, because of where he's been, and because of his quality. So the Euro snobs want Bradley at a European club fighting for a position to improve his game, to improve the US men's national team. Now, Bradley, of course, being in Europe, doesn't improve Major League Soccer. Major League Soccer bringing Bradley back does improve Major League Soccer in terms of the quality. Again, more exposure of a big US men's national team player, especially getting towards his peak, being back in the US. And for that, I can completely understand why Major League Soccer and Major League Soccer fans are extremely happy about Bradley doing it, because it coming back, because it gives so much to the league. But again, will he be tested in the same way as he would have been in Europe? Will he be able to improve and expand his game as well as he would have been in Europe? These are all kind of hypotheticals, because we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how long this move is going to be. Actually, somebody on Twitter last night said that they expected Bradley to be back in Europe by 2015, that this would be like a flash in the pan short-term move. In all seriousness, that this was kind of a get him in, get the hype going, get him back out again. Before a World Cup as well, this is the other thing that a lot of people were saying. Before a World Cup, do you really want to see one of your best US men's national team players, you know, coasting it to an extent? And I don't think Bradley will coast it, because he doesn't have that mentality as a player. You know, he's a guy that when he goes out, he puts in 110% every single time. But at the same time, a lot of people questioning whether he would be tempted to just kind of cruise through to through Major League Soccer, especially when it's arguably not as testing as other leagues.
Right.
So there are two sides, as I say, to this story. It's, do you want Bradley and US soccer to benefit from having players in Europe, from being tested, having your best players tested in the best leagues in the world, arguably, and then providing kind of an attraction for fans of US soccer in the USA to look to Europe and then build up their following of soccer? Or do you want Major League Soccer to grow in terms of exposure, rather than growing maybe internally and doing what has happened over the last few years of creating stars out of people like Omar Gonzalez, out of Graham Zusi, by bringing them through the Major League Soccer ranks, having them in the US men's national team performing well, and then kind of being linked with these stars that come back from Europe to play in the US men's national team, and Major League Soccer growing that way. It's almost like a short-term, long-term gain. Major League Soccer can benefit from both. US soccer can benefit from definitely from the long-term game, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with the US men's national team in the short-term game. But it got very heated. I mean, I'd love to go through all of the tweets that I was getting and we went through last night, but honestly, we don't have time in this in this show to go through all of them.
After it was like 100 and something interactions, I had to kind of, well, I think I need to leave work now. So
I gotta just let it go. Let it go.
It was a great conversation, and I mean, there's some. I mean, very, very. The great thing was is that most people were able to at the end kind of accept both sides and understand both sides and see all perspectives, which is really something I was kind of impressed with, because at first it seemed very polar opposite. And even myself, I think I kind of was very anti the move. I understand it a lot more personally. I get what they're saying. I still believe in my heart that I would like to see Michael Bradley, you know, prove it for us as a nation, as a, you know, soccer public, I guess, abroad. I want him fighting for spots. I think that in general, you are a better player when you are having to raise your game, not necessarily, you know, it's hard to be one player lifting the game of 20, you know, 21 others in a match than it is to kind of play down to your competition juice. Mm. And I do fear that Michael Bradley coming to MLS, he's going to end up having to play down to his competition a little bit. And I think that his form might suffer, and I think that the U.S. game is going to suffer a little bit.
The U.S. game in terms of the U.S. men's national team?
Yeah, I do think so. Because he is. I mean, he is our one of our stalwarts in our midfield general. And, you know, I think that there is a lot to say for him going out abroad.
Well, he's surely going to be the U.S. men's national team captain, not at this World Cup, but at the next one at least. You know, he is the kind of solid rock, almost like a much nicer version of Roy Keane. in terms of the being one of the best US men's national team players, being a real anchor and looking like a leader in the heart of that midfield. And of course, that's exactly where you'd want your kind of midfield your kind of captain to be, the general of midfield. And Bradley can do that for the US. For Toronto, as I say, these two signings, because we haven't even talked about Jermaine Defoe yet as well, these two signings, absolutely fantastic for them. Think about this, Raf. 2012, 9 games without a point in Major League Soccer, the opening 9 games. In that same season, their last 14 games, Toronto managed to pick up 4 points. You move that 2 years on, and suddenly you've got arguably the best US men's national team player at the moment coming back to play for you, and you're going to have a Premier League striker who's a proven goal scorer, hasn't been, you know, on crazy good form recently, but in 2012, for instance, Defoe racked up something like 12, 13 Premier League goals in 24 starts, which isn't bad. I'd take a goal every other game if I was at Toronto right now. And he's still 31. He's not kind of, he's over that 30 plus stage, but he's not in the 34 category. The legs have gone and he's just going to be standing there and shooting. This is a guy that can still finish, and he just broke the record for Tottenham's European leading goal scorer.
He's brilliant, Juice, but at the same time, remember, he may not be over the hill old, but he is old. And in general, his appearances for Tottenham, you know, his appearances for the clubs that he's been playing for the past 5-6 years, I feel like, have been primarily, you know, the one-offs. You know, he may start a FA Cup game, but usually it's like a substitution. And he does come on and he plays well. He, you know, puts a lot of energy onto the pitch, and he changes the dynamic of the attack and stuff. But I'm not sure if he's going to be able to kind of really be there for the full MLS season. Whereas I think, you know, Michael Bradley, he can easily put in a shift day in, day out throughout the entire season, no doubt.
It will be very interesting to see how this thing goes, because and how the season goes for Toronto now with these two.
I'm going to tell you right now that I'm not expecting very much out of Toronto. I don't think it's going to be, I mean, they might lift a couple of places on the table, but I'm not sure if they have what it takes to get to the playoffs yet.
I don't think this makes them guaranteed playoffs teams, but I think this takes them out of the bottom ranks of Major League Soccer. You know, this doesn't guarantee playoffs, but if you can have Jermaine Defoe maybe scoring, you know, let's say he scores 20 goals next season in Major League Soccer, big game changer for Toronto. If you can also have Bradley playing like that mop-up midfield role and his distribution, you know, Toronto, they've not got an incredible side, but they've still got pieces to their puzzle. And they've got a young coach who's willing to maybe try things, move things about. I think this is a game changer for Toronto in terms of not this year, but, you know, 2 years' time, a year's, maybe even next year. Who knows? Who knows this coming Major League Soccer season? That's the great thing about MLS as well, is that it's so difficult for to kind of predict. You know, you've got your stalwart sides, you know, your Seattle, your LA, your RSLs. But those other places, who would have thought the Union would be pushing so hard and for playoffs and whatnot last season after the year they had the year before? And they're a big loser in this one as well, because the Union apparently made that push for Bradley to join them. The other thing that I like about this story, by the way, Raf, is do you remember when Dempsey moved? And and it turned out there were three sides that were kind of all wanted to bring him in at first. There was Philadelphia, there was Toronto, and there was Seattle. Philadelphia kind of said they couldn't really do it at that time. And then Toronto, apparently, according to the article in Sports Illustrated, I think it was Grant Wall that probably wrote it, if my memory serves me correctly, Toronto apparently sidestepped bringing in Dempsey, because they kind of went, it's probably better for the US game if Dempsey goes to Seattle, big club, playoffs, first year, big exposure, big thing for the US men's national team, for US soccer. I wonder if that almost gave them kind of dibs. The fact that they passed on trying to bring Dempsey in and didn't battle Seattle, I wonder if it almost seriously gave them dibs.
No, it's a very interesting point you're making.
For a player like this, I'd love to know the behind-the-scenes chat.
Yeah.
During that time with Dempsey, and if kind of Toronto were given kind of a incentive to pass on Dempsey. Maybe didn't know about Bradley being that guy yet, but it was almost like, if something comes up similar to this, then we go and take you. And he comes to Toronto with Major League Soccer's help. But we're expecting confirmation. The other thing is that none of this has been completely confirmed yet. Defoe looks far more likely to be.
I think Defoe is practically
just like nailed on, pretty much. Yeah. But the Bradley thing, we're still waiting on confirmation from Toronto regarding it. We will continue to wait for that. But at the same time, if this takes place as it looks likely to happen, then this is going to be a big move and a big game changer. I still think for Toronto FC. Raph, we spent almost 25 minutes straight on Major League Soccer. I love it. And on two players as well. I absolutely love it when we get into this. Big thanks to everybody, as I say, who got involved on Twitter last night. Big congratulations as well, by the way, to Ross Friedman and Matt Walker. Matt, obviously, we spoke to earlier. But want to reiterate the congrats to both those two. I felt really bad last night because we were chatting with Matt and with Ashley and the Columbus crew in general over Twitter, trying to secure and get Matt sorted to come on the show today. And I felt really bad because Matt and Ross were both signed on the same day yesterday for the Columbus crew. And I hadn't tweeted, and World Football Daily hadn't tweeted anything out to him at that point. So I had to send a tweet out saying, hey, congrats to you as well, man. Really, really big dream. And a big congrats to anybody who's getting signed up from the universities, from the academies, and becoming Major League Soccer players and living the dream.
Can I just interrupt a little bit? I mean, that's another thing. We are really looking forward to this new MLS season. And in general, we are looking to bring you a much better coverage than last season. We're going to be kind of tapping into all of our clubs again and getting not just these new players, but coaches, other players, DPs, things like that. On a more regular basis, so just stay tuned, sit tight, and enjoy the fact that World Football Daily, however much we love and are potentially considered Euro snobs on
well,
the year
you,
there.
This is what I want to ask you about, Raph. As you say it, what do you make of this Euro snobs thing? Because I don't like being accused of something, especially by people on Twitter or anything like that, because people don't know you on Twitter. And what we'd like to do, especially last night, was very much play devil's advocate. You know, somebody would say something, we'd ask the questions that would be almost the guaranteed rebuttal of that and see what their reply is, and kind of just making the argument tick along and go on for as long as possible in the end. Mm-hmm. But what do you make of this Euro snobs thing? Because I have heard some journalists say that it's very difficult. If you go against Major League Soccer, it can sometimes be quite awkward. You maybe don't get as much help in terms of interviews or anything like that. This, again, is all rumour and stuff. But this whole Euro snobs idea is really dividing US soccer community, it seems, because you have some people that will say, well, you know, European football is better. And that you have some people that are saying, well, I think Major League Soccer is pretty much almost there in terms of parity. And I find that difficult to take in because it's not there as the in terms of parity between European football and US soccer, but it is getting there. You know, the steps are being made for made progress and are moving forward, but there are still people that kind of say, oh, Major League Soccer is just about there, it's almost there. And if you don't agree with that, a lot of people do start kind of hurling out these Euro snobs and, oh, you hate Major League Soccer and all this kind of stuff. I mean, surely we, in US soccer, we want to not divide but conquer.
Sure, exactly. I understand. I understand what you're saying. In general, I do think there's Euro snobs out there. I do, and I think that there is a stereotype of the Euro snobs. I think that the English call-in guy to your Talk Sports and your BBC Five Lives and stuff like that are probably your Euro snobs. You know, like the guys who say that it's so difficult to win on, you know, at the Stadium of Light on a Wednesday night or something like that. I mean, this kind of thing, it exists. It exists. And there are even, those soccer fans in the States, both kind of expats from abroad. And I mean, sometimes not even myself. I know that European football is well, a hefty level above Major League Soccer, and again, I'm very realistic in knowing that MLS is very young still. I mean, hundreds of years have passed, or not hundreds, but you know what I mean. Over 100 years of English soccer has been going down, Juice. There's just the amount of history and even tribalism behind European soccer is just immense. And the top players, the skilled players, it's very much like NBA basketball. You know, I think the best players in the world come to play in the NBA because, well, that's where the talent really is. It's not to say that there isn't talent playing in other countries and that we don't see, you know, the odd talent that gets kind of caught up in these international competitions like the Olympics and FIBA basketball tournaments and stuff like that. But I think most people would tend to agree that, you know, there is maybe a gold standard. And I'm not saying that, you know, that Premiership is the gold standard by any means, but I am saying that maybe Champions League, a gold standard for club competition potentially. I'm referencing the European Champions League, the UEFA Champions League. And in general, I do feel like the standard of European soccer compared to just the general standard of North American soccer. I mean, Mexico, you know, that's very entertaining soccer. And I don't want to try to lump them in too much, but I'm talking about, you know, your Puerto Rican like leagues and domestic leagues of Haiti and stuff like that. Cuba, they're not going to match up to your Dutch leagues, you know, your Serie A, your Bundesliga, things like that. You know, I think we've even kind of come to the agreement that MLS may be more similar to Championship, you know, in England. That's my kind of personal feel. But it's not to say, look, I'm very patient now. I kind of was one of these people who was, I call him almost like a Casey Kiernan who just want U.S. soccer to be the best right now. That's not realistic, Juice. And that's not what I want to be. I don't want to be a Johnny come lately. I want to be there forever. And I want to establish a base, a history, culture.
You want it to be stable. You know, the great thing about Major League Soccer is that they have not rushed much. You know, it didn't happen in 96 and suddenly go, here's a load of money, let's do everything, let's go crazy. You know, they were patient with what they were doing when they started Major League Soccer, and they took their time to make sure that a ground root and kind of foundations were laid to make a secure league. You know, now it's getting tested because of the idea of people wanting promotion and relegation, because of DP players, because of the TV money starting to rise, because of all this stuff. And it's likely, you know, 50, 60 years time, we could see a Major League Soccer very similar run to the way that things like the Premier League are run. But at the moment, you know, Major League Soccer is financially a secure league. You know, these teams maybe aren't making billions upon billions, but they're making money and it's remaining a profitable league at the moment. And that's a big positive, and that's helped lay a foundation. They can start doing things like DP players and improving the league in different ways, shapes and forms, and taking maybe chances about expanding it to 24 sides, and which obviously comes with the possibilities of diluting the quality and the talent in Major League Soccer. That's another debate that we had a while back here on the show. But I think in general, Major League Soccer has done very well in not rushing to go out and be the best immediately and immediately catch up with the European leagues by flooding it with, you know, millions upon millions of money in terms of transfers and players' wages. And I think that's something you have to say has built over the last, you know, almost 20 years now, built kind of a solid history and, as you say, foundation to the game.
Sure. I almost wonder if like U.S. soccer in general, I'm talking about, you know, the collective, which I mean, the very much collective of, you know, U.S. soccer, MLS, the, you know, these media types like the idea of, you know, Euro snobs and people kind of downplaying or general media hype about the league. You know, I bet you they almost rouse these American fans to want more faster because it creates that fanaticism, that, you know, rabid desire and passion, which ultimately does kind of grow the followership. You know, that passion from one person's will kind of spread you know, to others slowly here in the States, slowly. But you know, it's happening, Juice. I mean, I'm okay with where the United States is at. You know, I don't have crazy expectations for this World Cup, you know, especially with our draw. I'm very hopeful of getting through to the next round. Of course, as an American supporter, I'd like to believe in my team. But look, I feel like I know my place in the greater world of, you know, soccer nations, football nations. And I think our time will come. And when it does come, you know, for all those fans of teams that have kind of struggled and found their feet late or something like that, I think it'll be fantastically fulfilling when we do win our World Cup. And I'm saying it, man. We're going to win it one day.
At some point. At some point.
At some point. 30 something something. Yeah.
The talk about Major League Soccer, about these moves, about the positives for Tottenham and negatives for Tottenham, we haven't spoken about that, and of course Roma as well. We might try and cover a little bit of that tomorrow, but we are running out of time here on World Football Daily. Just enough time to say a very big thank you to everybody who first got involved on social media discussing the big moves and the game changers, so to speak, that took place last night on Twitter. Rumour and debate, the January transfer window is going to be full of it, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. A big thanks, as always, to Joseph Sexton for bringing us all the talk about La Liga and Lionel Messi's return last night. I mean, 2 goals, 4 minutes, anything more. I actually got a message from a very good friend of mine who said, West Ham getting about to get relegated and Lionel Messi back playing football. Are we back in 2011 again? And footballing, world footballing order was almost restored last night by having Messi back playing and scoring 2 goals yesterday evening. And of course, a very big thanks as well to the brand new young Matt Walker signing for the Columbus Crew, and a big congratulations to him once again, and Ross Friedman. And a thanks to Columbus Crew for arranging that interview so quickly as well. We will be back at the same time tomorrow, bringing a bit of IKTS, a preview of some of the big games coming out of the weekend, or coming up this weekend, should I say. And of course, we'll be chatting all things MLS, transfer windows, and all of that as well on World Football Daily. Cracking show as always. A big thanks to you, Raf, as well. And of course, a big thanks to all of our listeners. Show at World footballdaily.com is a place to catch us, as well as at WFootballDaily on Twitter if you didn't see it last night, and of course the Facebook page as well. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Have a very enjoyable Thursday, and we will see you on Friday. The week's almost over, the football's almost back again. Oh, Schweiniger, how are you? The Friday.